Welcome back to the Gospel Sports Truths Podcast. I am your host, Zay, the fantasy football fiend himself, and I have my guy, BK Wins. How the people, BK?
Hey, y'all.
Yo, so a lot going on in the wonderful world of sports this week. We will go over several things that have already taken place, talk about a couple of things that are en route. Just a quick reminder, you can catch us on YouTube at The Gospel STP. Again, that's at The Gospel STP. And if you have not yet joined the Facebook group, make sure you join the Facebook group as well, The Gospel Sports Truth Facebook group. Let's go right ahead and hop into the good word of the week. What we got, BK?
Sure. So in surprising news in the NBA this week, the Denver Nuggets fire both head coach Michael Malone and will not renew GM Calvin Booth's contract amid growing tension between the two. The Nuggets have lost four in a row leading into this firing. I don't know about you, but I was completely shocked that they fired their head coach. How about you? What was your reaction?
Yeah, so I'm not exactly 100% sure what the goal of any NBA season is at this point, because it feels as if the NBA is going rogue. Or not necessarily the NBA, but certain teams within the NBA is that they're just deciding that we're going to do this in a way that it has never been done, and we're going to be able to pat ourselves on the back when it comes to fruition, which I don't believe it will for most of these teams. But hey, at the same time, I thought what Cleveland did was foolish. They made a fool out of me. I thought that Bickerstaff going to the Pistons would be a step down instead of being a step in the right direction for his career. Was wrong about that. So I can only assume that sometimes, even though you're really good at what you do, there's a plus minus by getting what you aren't very good at out of that room. And that's what I'm seeing here. The fact that they're fourth in the standings in the West right now out of 10 playoff teams, or well, including the play-in teams. To do that, like, not even mid-season, to do that weeks before the playoffs, like, there was something. Their issues and then their deal breakers. Something was said or done, or there was something that went on that was a deal breaker for this to happen right now. So I believe that Coach Malone will land on his feet. The Nuggets will be what they pretty much have been for the vast majority of their existence. But yeah, this came out of nowhere for sure.
Yeah, so I tried to read the tea leaves and make sense of why something was done, right? So, and we're going to kind of go back. I'm going to go back at least and look at a few things. So the Bucks have never been the same since they fired Budenholzer after winning the title there, right? And we shake our head with all the coaches they've had and how poorly it's gone. And we're like, what's going on here? You know, Nick Nurse in Toronto, you know, all the success and the title he won there, another coach on it, you know, in a different franchise, not in Toronto, you know. You look at how Vogel was treated, you know, after winning a title. And I'm not saying that these coaches are perfect. Please don't think, you know, they have their opportunities. But they are title-winning coaches.
Mike Brown at just about every stop.
Yeah. He's taking a tour of the NBA. But you know, Michael Malone just won the title a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and from what I've gathered, it seems like there was a personnel or philosophical difference between the front office and Michael Malone in terms of the right players to surround Jokic with. But the only thing that doesn't pass the smell test to me here is if A is true and there was a difference between the front office and Malone, and Malone is fired, that makes sense to me, right? If that is the truth, right, that would make sense. So your bosses are usually going to win. However, then why was the GM not retained? You know,
let me help you out, BK. let me tell you what this is. Okay. I have four children. Okay. Every now and then, all four, or at least two out of the four, will start to go back and forth with each other. And then I have to step in, not because I even care about their argument, but just because I'm tired of hearing it. Okay. This wasn't a you're right, they're wrong. This is a both of you get out of my room. That's what that was. I'm done with it. I told you to get it together. You can't seem to get it together. The toy's going in the trash. Neither one of you will play with it. This is what just happened in Denver. The owner was like, I'm sick of both of you. I have the star athlete that'll bring in the star coach. I'm getting rid of both of you. That's what just happened.
No, that makes perfect sense. I like it. So next, in the end of March Madness on both the men's and the women's side, first the men, the Gators overcame a second half deficit and beat the Cougars 65-63. With 13 and a half minutes left in the game, Houston led 45-34 and somehow lost despite Gators star Walter Clayton Jr. only scoring 11 points. How surprised were you that the Gators won? What was your reaction to the collapse? What do you make of this?
My reaction to the collapse was cha-ching, because that bet came through. That was my reaction to the meltdown, because I thought it was over. I was 2 for 2, thanks to you, BK, wins 2 days in a row. We talked through the over-under on the girls' game, and then we talked through the what was likely to happen on the men's side. I got that from you the week before and put it in then. But yeah, it was what I thought would happen or could happen didn't happen until the very end. I felt like what we saw from Florida at the end is what we would have seen from them throughout the game's entirety. Not sure what kind of alerted them that they were in a championship game and then they played as such. But with Houston, I mean, you got to hold your head high for being there, while at the same time, you have to ask yourself some very important questions. Like, if you give me that much of a head start with that much time left over, why can't we figure out a way to hold off a team that we've been fending off for three quarters of the game, although there's two halves, I understand. Sidebar, that's something that gets on my nerves. Why does college men's basketball have two halves and everybody else has four quarters? I just thought I'd throw it out real quick. I don't know, but go ahead.
So I think this game played out how a lot of us thought that it would. Both teams have what I call spurt ability, where they go on devastating runs. And we all know basketball is a game of runs, and these teams are two of the three best at going on runs. I include Duke as the other team who would just go on these classic runs this year, 24-2, 18-0, like just these where all of a sudden you're in it and the next thing you know, you blank and it's done. And, you know, Houston came out strong in the second half. They built up an early lead. I know you and I were talking during the game and, you know, we were surprised that, I mean, Houston came out in the second half and really put it to Florida. But the one thing that Houston struggled with throughout the year that I think got them in the end is they really struggle to score points. You know, and part of that is style of play. They want to grind you out and play defense and kill you on the glass with their offensive rebounding. And they dominated the Gators on the offensive boards in this matchup, not overall rebounding, but at least on the offensive end, which gives you a lot of second looks and chances to score. But they shoot such a poor percentage that you need those misses to even have a chance, because you're just not knocking down your shots. It's a devastating loss for Houston. This was theirs to win. They had it. But much like Duke, you know, a couple nights before where they had it, they had Houston dead to rights and gave it away. Houston returned the favor. And give Florida credit. This team has completely changed its culture and completely changed its roster. And their willingness to play defense has turned them into a mediocre team, into a championship team. So, you know, oftentimes we criticize when teams do the wrong thing. And don't get me wrong, Houston really choked this away. But give Florida credit for their tremendous improvement. And I don't want to go through the segment and not give them their props for a terrific season and a job well done.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes sense. Two things can be true. Moving on over to the girls' game. UConn crushed South Carolina in my hopes and dreams of repeating as champs. It was just abysmal. Like, it was horrible. It didn't feel close even when it was close. It felt like you were waiting for the bottom to fall out pretty early. We decided to try to match wits with someone that was as smart, possibly smarter than us, and hope that we can hold out the hope of them having a brain fart before we did, essentially. We begun the game in a running gun type style where it was interesting, and it was surprising that it was going back and forth, and then immediately it was just like a cold shower. Carolina was hot, and then they went like colder than I've seen them go on the season. I don't know how much of that goes to them, how much of it goes to the credit of UConn's defense, but they could not buy a basket. And a lot of the baskets that were being missed, I can't give credit to UConn's defense because it was two or three people under the basket, and we're missing layups. We're missing wide open threes, missing wide open mid-range shots. Like, if we had just made half of the misses, the game would have still been at a level where cooler heads could have still prevailed versus everyone becoming emotionally stunted or unintelligent for moments of the game, whether it be players, coaching staff, all that. It just, everything that could go left in this game went left. And at the end of the day, I was humbled. Like, I know how good UConn is, but I didn't see them being that much better than this team, if that makes sense. And they just were. That there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
So, from a South Carolina standpoint, one of the many, many things that makes Coach Don Staley so amazing is, and you saw it throughout this year a couple different times, her ability to make adjustments after losses and make her team better. She's a master at figuring things out. And the fact that she had no answers, and it was pretty evident early on that this was very similar to game one. And I listened to the broadcast on ESPN before the game, actual game, and all of them, all the analysts and experts said, there's no way that this is going to be a repeat of the game in Columbia in February. And honestly, it was exactly the same showing. And it kind of goes back to what you and I have talked about on this program and privately, Zay, which is South Carolina is used to being the alpha dog in women's basketball. Since Coach Staley's been there, she's been on the number one of one. They've won more titles in the last 10 years than anybody. They won three, and to be honest with you, they got robbed of a fourth because of COVID. They were a huge favorite to win that one, and she would have had four in 10 years, right? But first of all, Gino's a brilliant coach. It also helped that he had the three best players. you know, everyone talks about how great Paige Becker's the presumptive number one pick, right? And she's great. There's not a program that wouldn't love to have Paige Becker. But then you have AZ Fun. And then, and then the other person that people like finally are starting to talk about is Phenom freshman Sarah Strong, who literally had 24, 22, 22 in the Elite Eight Final Four in the national title game and had double-doubles in all those games, 22 and 15 in the championship game. They dominated inside. Their defense was really good. Carolina players in the presser afterwards commented about how great the coaching and the game plan was of UConn. And they kept going back to the same things that kept working that they couldn't stop, which is also a sign of great coaching. Keep running it until they stop it. But it's hard to beat a team in basketball where there's a starting five. And both these teams were really only playing seven players with a lot of minutes. It's hard to beat a team when one team has the three best players on their side. It's just hard to overcome that. Carolina is great to the point that you mentioned. Zay, it's already happened. They've already hit the portal. They got a superstar from Florida State to already, you know, come there, you know, who led the country.
The highest scoring, I want to say average this year in women's college.
She averaged over 25 a game. So, you know, believe me, Carolina will be back. I know that this is going to be an unpopular opinion here in Columbia, but I actually think what happened is really good for this program.
So I can see the silver lining in our dark cloud, to be honest with you. What tends to happen when you're a really good program and you have a deficit that's easily noticeable, people tend to say, hey, if I was there, you wouldn't have to worry about any of that. It goes from you being Kawhi Leonard and bringing a championship to Toronto, feeling that way because something was missing and there wouldn't be a championship unless you showed up. People would rather feel that way than feel like they're the Kevin Durant in the room, which they joined a team that just won a championship. And even if you just went along for the ride, I don't see a different result happening. So it'll actually end up in the long run based on a couple of things. Most of the athletes on the female side, they tend to stay for 4 years. And then, well, unless they hit the portal, which is a new issue to have. But South Carolina rarely sees quite a bit of that unless someone better than someone that was a starter comes through the portal and they kind of see the writing on the wall, which the problem there has already fixed itself before it even was made evident that there was going to be a problem because the replacement player is there. But yeah, it's I believe that this will, in the scheme of things, make Carolina a better team. That you'll never see the same deficiencies again that you saw this year. Don's going to keep a few things in the cupboard just to make sure we won't have any issues there. And in all honesty, if we're able to do just a little bit more in the post as far as scoring and keeping other teams from scoring, things would have had the opportunity to turn out a bit different this year. So,
what's interesting to me, too, just going back to the UConn thing, I listened to Gino in a couple of press conferences. And one of the things that was telling to me was there were rumblings around from the outside there of the program that was it time to leave? You know, they hadn't won a title in 9 years. Was it time? And I sit there and I say to myself, who, by the way, has no vested interest whether UConn ever wins another basketball game or not. Okay, let me be clear about this. The man coming into this year has won 11 titles. If you go through the pecking order, He had 11 prior to last Sunday, now has 12. The legendary and late Pat Summitt had 8. Kim Mulkey's 3rd at 4, and then you have Don Staley and Vandeveer at 3. So he's got 11 of them prior to winning 12. The man has forever changed the landscape of women's basketball because of the standard he's had at UConn. He deserves to write his own ending. Whenever he wants to leave, he can leave. Unless he does something, you know, absolutely, you know,
stupid.
He commits a crime on the court, murders someone. You know what I mean? Like something that you can't turn your eye from. But like just in terms of from wins and losses, if that's the only thing, he gets to go when he says he's ready to go. That's the only one who should be making that decision. Because that program will not be the same when he leaves, and they need to ride that horse as long as they can. But it also goes back to what you and I talk about in other sports, say that it applies here. If UConn took 9 years to win a title again, right? Their longest drought since he got there. Winning is hard. Winning is really, really hard. The media and the fans think it's like a birthright that you're UConn or South Carolina and you're in the Final Four and you should just win it every year. But it doesn't work like that. You got to stay healthy. Your players have to gel together. You have to avoid players going nuts like a Caitlin Clark who just dominates a game or a tournament or whatever, like, or another player that just happens to go off. Like there's some luck that is involved in this too. And for everything to go right over 6 games is tough. And I just want people to understand how hard it is to actually win.
That's any sport on most levels, unless you just, even when you got a stacked team, it's so much that can go left. Like how many seasons have we gone into a season, no matter the sport, clearly knowing who the most talented team is, but the most talented team not being the team that won the most for whatever reason. And it's not always injury. Look at Phoenix. The Phoenix Suns has had one of the most talented teams in the NBA since they put that squad together, but it just don't work. Like, there are tons of other examples where you can have all the talent and it still just doesn't come out right because Cinderella comes out of nowhere. And talk to any Patriots fan and get them to explain to you how in the world we lost to the Giants on what would have been only the second perfect season of in the NFL ever. Like, there's no way that team should have won, especially the way they won. And it was just too many things that went right for that one thing to be the end all. Like, the refs should have thrown the flag because Eli was obviously in the grasp of the defender and he didn't want to get flagged for roughing the passer, which that was when they were kind of started the focusing on or the emphasis on that, if you will. You guys know what happened in that game. I'm not going to break all that down, but I'm just saying sometimes the better team or sometimes a really good team has things that can go really wrong and there's not much you can do about it. That is what it is. I can tell you something that's going really right for one person. Yeah, there's a guy that just got $500 million allotted to him over the next 14 years. The Blue Jays star first baseman Vlad Guerrero is now not a millionaire, a $500 million off of one contract. Mamas, don't let your sons grow up to play football. Let them play baseball. Like goodness gracious. Like, this guy just got a contract that exceeds the gross domestic product of some countries. How does I'm happy for him, I guess. I'm just, sheesh. Like baseball, they pay like no other. And I don't even know where all the money comes from because it's like not where it used to be as far as popularity and all that good stuff. But my goodness, they can come up with some dollars. Like, is it really that deep to have any guy at first base. Like, I know he's great. I know he's really good, but I guess in an uncapped sport, you got to do what you got to do. It's a, you know, if I don't get it from you, I'm going to get it from somewhere. What are we going to do? Barbecue and mildew. So, yeah.
So
very, very good for one Mr. Vlad Guerrero.
So great for the man from Vlad, for sure, right? Great for him. He's laughing all the way to the bank.
Literally.
But I am. So what's interesting to me, though, is I think overall, this is a loss for both players, both the organization and the player. And here's why. Vlad would have gotten that money no matter where he went. And what I don't understand if I'm him is, why would I want to get all this money to be tied up to a team that has no chance of doing anything? So, like, you basically guaranteed yourself for the rest of your career, you're going to be absolutely irrelevant, other than when you go to the bank.
Yeah, you know what else he guaranteed himself?
A lifetime of money.
No, forget the money. Like you said, he was going to get that anywhere. BK, you got to understand, for some people, winning isn't everything. Like the actual winning of a team sport is not everything. It's kind of like saying, well, we know, and I'm just making this super simple. We know that McDonald's is better than Burger King. But if I need a job, everybody can't work at McDonald's, so I'm okay with working at Burger King, which I prefer Burger King. I just wanted to make a really simple example.
We better be supporting my initials, Zay. That'll be a separate presentation.
But what it boils down to is you get to a point where it's like, does it matter where in the industry I'm working when it's such a limited industry in general? Like, maybe I like my situation and I like having people around me that don't boss me around or don't demand certain expectations. Maybe I like actually being able to go on vacation earlier than everyone else because I can make plans way before we get anywhere close to October because I already know what's about to happen. I know what's happening this year. I know what's happening next year. And guess what? I got plenty of money to spend. Let's get that vacation going ASAP. So there are a few things that come along with not necessarily being the best that's okay with certain people. For me, I if I'm in his shoes, even if I want to stay with the Blue Jays, why would I essentially pledge the rest of my baseball life when I can at least hold your feet to the fire? Kind of like what LeBron has done with just about every team. I'm going to fulfill my contract. I'm not going to pledge you the next 10 years because then if you decide that you don't want to pay anybody else but me, I'm stuck. So I apparently winning isn't the end all be all for him. That's all I can come up with for you to sign away the rest of your baseball life with the team that you know isn't good. So
I can't argue any of that. Well, in sad news, former Major League Baseball pitcher Octavio Dotel passed away tragically in Santo Domingo, the Dominican Republic, Tuesday, when a nightclub roof collapsed, killing at least 78 people and injuring 160 others. Dotel was 51. Really saddened by that news and prayers to his family and everyone there in the DR that had this tragic thing happen. I just hate hearing it.
I don't know if you saw any of the footage, but it looked like a bomb went off on that place. Like it was like the building collapsed. It wasn't just like you couldn't see anything but rubble. It looked as if what I would expect to see if a building had been, you know, detonated or something. Like, but it looked horrible. Like, yeah, prayers up for and melancholy happy trails to anyone involved in that particular incident. On a happier note, pardon the abrupt transition. But on a happier note, Capitol star Alex Ovechkin has made history with the 895th goal scored on Sunday, passing Hall of Famer Wayne Gretzky to become the NHL's all-time goal-scoring leader. He was already a Hall of Famer before getting this. What does this do for his legacy going forward, or is it pretty much solidified to the point that no matter what else he does, you can't get much better than where his standing already places him?
So I think it's incredible because they both did it in as many seasons. A year, season 20 for both the great one Gretzky and also Ovechkin. I never thought that anybody would pass 894 goals. That's crazy. But kudos to him on just a Hall of Fame, legendary, superstar career. The one thing that I do want to mention, and this is not to diminish or devalue the greatness of Ovechkin, but I want to do a little comparison because, you know, I do a little perusing on social media and I read about certain folks saying that he's better than Gretzky and blah, 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 and all this stuff, which I think is blasphemous, by the way. And just to be clear for all you hockey fans out there, sports fans, I have zero interest, rooting interest in the Caps or the Oilers or, you know, just to be clear, except for I love that the Oilers made me money in last year's Stanley Cup. Thank you for getting the MVP, McDavid. Appreciate you. That I just sounded like you, Zay. That was, you know, you're rubbing off on me, I think. But just a little stats here, right? So if you're trying to do a goat race between the great one Gretzky and Ovechkin. So while Ovechkin does have the goal lead now, how about this? Again, same number of seasons. Gretzky, 1,963 assists to 724 for Ovechkin. So, plus 239 there. Total points, 2,857 to 1,619. So, that's 1,238 advantage Gretzky. I say this to say, they both played the same amount of seasons. The goals is one thing. And look, Ovechkin's an all-time great. He deserves all the credit, praise, and adulation that this man is getting for his greatness. And by the way, the team is having a hell of a season, and so they have a great chance of maybe even winning the cup. So, you know, for those that, you know, winning still matters, clearly not other people in Toronto, but other people, winning still matters, and so they have a great chance of that. But needless to say, let's pump the brakes on the good talk.
I think that in certain situations, to be in the conversation is good enough. There's not much that can happen between year 20 and whenever Ovechkin calls it a quit that I can even make it sound intelligent as an argument to compare his greatness to that of Gretzky. It's just different. Just about every other sport, there's at least two people that you can go blow to blow, and if you're open and honest, you can say to yourself, well, you got a point there if I look at it from that angle. There's no angle. There's no because you scored. Let's say by the time it's all said and done, he ends up outscoring him by 20 goals. Okay. Well, unless that's the only stat in hockey, you're not close to being the GOAT, because I can take 10 other stats that you don't hold a candle. And again, this is not a beat up on Alex Ovechkin the day after he makes history conversation. I know it may sound like that, but in the humble words of BK, greatness isn't necessarily greatest. And we have to make that distinction sometime. I didn't write that down. I just came up with that, BK. I don't know that I've heard anyone else say it before, but I kind of like the way that felt. I'm going to say it again, just for the purpose of the audience that may not have caught it the first time. Greatness does not necessarily equate to greatest, especially when we're looking at this particular scenario. It does in the NBA when we're talking about LeBron over Jordan, but that's just a conversation for a different day. But go ahead, BK.
Nevertheless, I'm just going to overlook the nonsense. All of you guys out there, you can just skip past this part of it and just move on and know that some people have the right to be wrong.
Hey, but nevertheless, we're telling us around here, BK.
But that being said, I think there's levels to it, and I think that's what we were trying to eloquently, you know, point out. Well, moving, that wraps up the good news to the truth. Only a couple things on the docket in the truth and nothing but the truth this week. Both, as we wrap up March Madness, we're going to go a little bit behind a couple things. What's first on the truth and nothing but the truth say?
All righty. So, man, we talked about the collapse of the Houston Cougars. They weren't the only team that collapsed. And there was a team that was, quote unquote, supposed to win a championship this year, or at least make it to the game, that had a collapse as well that just went way wrong. Let's figure this thing out, talk it out. There are a lot of different avenues of approach as far as what contributed to it, but Duke had an absolutely epic collapse. Humble opinion, what went wrong? Where does this rank all time as far as March Madness collapses are concerned? How does this affect the future of the program? Does it affect Cooper Flagg at all? Like, what does this do as far as Duke is concerned?
So,
and actually, I apologize. Let me just remind you, in the national semifinal game, Duke led 59-45 with 8 minutes and 17 seconds left in the game. Even more surprisingly, they were still leading 66-59 with a minute and 14 seconds left and 67-61 with 35 seconds left. Two possession game, two threes at that, 35 seconds left. They still figured out a way to not win. What happened, BK?
So I feel like that this is an absolute crushing and devastating loss for Duke. And I think it is that way for a few reasons. I'm going to start with the head coaching part of it. John Shire's a hell of a coach. He just finished his third season. And all of you guys know out there, for the record, for those of you just tuning in for the first time, for those of you who've been with us for over a year since we've been doing this together, you already know the deal. I bleed baby blue in North Carolina, so know that I'm not at all a Duke fan. But I've always said, and family friends know when I say this, if I could pick any college coach to coach one of my teams, it would have been Coach K. The man is an absolute superstar, legend. I cannot say enough great things about the quality of human. He's kind of like the male version of Dawn Staley. As legendary as are they are a coach, they're even a better person, and that's hard to come by. So, but that being said, it's hard to follow a legend. It's hard. It's going to be hard in New England to follow Belichick. We already have seen that. It's hard to follow Nick Saban at Alabama. We've already seen that. Tennessee has tried to fill Phil Fulmer's shoes for 20 years. They're finally slowly starting to turn the corner. You know, you look at Pat Summitt and the Lady Volunteers. They've struggled since her passing. They've struggled to put it together. I say all that to say it's really hard to win. Shire has a tough job. It's disappointing because I told you guys all along that they had the best team. I know that we talked 3 or 4 teams had a really good chance. They had the best player on the best team. And any time that you lose, and you know that you're only going to get one shot at this, because you know Cooper was one and done, he's going to the pros. Plus, you know there's a bunch of other players that are going to the pros. There's another one that's probably transferring. Another one that might also be transferring. So you know, they're probably going to lose five of their best seven players. And I know they're going to reload their Duke. They're going to do that. I get it. The Boozer brothers are coming in. They're going to be just fine, I assure you. But are they going to be championship worthy next season with the departure of this? And I have my doubts. And to be 35 seconds away from a national title game, to lose that is crushing. And I know a lot of people out there want to complain about the Cooper flag over the back call, where it was kind of a phantom bad call and it did give change a little bit. Look, you played 40 minutes. And even with all that, you're up 6 with 35 seconds to go. That had nothing to do with the officiating. You know why you lost? You couldn't inbound the ball. I coached intramurals when I was at Akron. My intramural team could inbound the ball better than this Duke team did. So the fundamentals failed them. When the lights were the brightest, that's why the coach, they're all the cliches. There's 40 minutes, right? 40 minutes in this game, which I know Zay hates because it's two halves versus four quarters. But dummy to poke the bear. But all that said is inbound the ball. Make your front end of your one-on-ones. Don't give up threes. Give up contested twos. Like, simple things down the stretch cost them the same things they cost Houston on Monday night when they lost the title, that they did everything right on Saturday. 2 days later, they did the same thing Duke did. And it was just as devastating. The difference is, from a national perception, Duke is a blue blood and everyone expects them to win. People are still coming around on Houston and getting used to them being really, really good with Coach Sampson, who does a hell of a job. But it's going to be tough for Duke moving forward. But to be honest, they have nobody to blame but themselves.
So you have on one end of the truth an epic collapse. On the other end of the truth, you have an epic championship run. So how impressive exactly is this UConn title run? What does it mean for Geno's legacy? He was able to take out three number one seeds en route to their 12th national title, 12 of them. I don't know too many coaches that are anywhere close to that. There may be a couple. Phil Jackson, I believe, doesn't he have 11, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah. Does somebody have more than 12?
Nope.
Okay, well, there's that piece of it. But like I said, they beat three number one seeds en route to winning that number 12 title for Geno, 78-64 over USC, 85-51 over UCLA, and 82-59 over South Carolina. And man, what's scary is two-thirds of the triple play that got the job done will be back, with Fudd and Strong both returning. I don't think that Geno has to come back, but I don't believe you could hold him off with 10 wild horses dragging him the other way. Winning at the highest level and then knowing that the cupboard isn't bare just makes a winner want to keep winning. It'd be different if there was no one else with Paige, and now Paige is leaving, and now I can turn the page, parting the pun, in the chapter of my book that houses UConn at the same time, because I don't necessarily feel like starting over. That isn't the case here, though. And they're going to have plenty of young ladies that want to hop in that portal and fill the positions that were vacated by those that will no longer be at the school. And I believe that they will be retooling and not rebuilding. And when you see what happened with Notre Dame, their top point guard is now in TCU. You've seen some of the other top teams where some of their pieces have moved around the chessboard a little bit. They could go into next year being close to, if not the preseason number one team. Already, they'd probably be behind both USC's, but it'll be real close, that'll all depend on the portal and how, you know, some other pieces move around. But how are you looking at this? Like, is there anything that Geno can do at this point other than maybe take some of the shine off of his winning? Could he find himself in like a Bill Belichick sort of situation where had you retired after you got that last championship, we'd be speaking of you like, you know, what's your boy in Vikings? I forget his name. You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so there's some times where continuing on actually is the demise of your legacy versus adding icing to the cake when everything you needed on the cake was there already. Can you see that happening with Geno, or where are we with this run and with Geno?
So I think the run was incredible because, you know, we talk all the time. It's not necessarily, well, there's two elements to it. Who did you play and who did you beat? But then how did you beat them? Like, all three of these were beatdowns, you know? And so, I mean, you win the national semifinal by an all-time record 34 over UCLA. And then you beat Carolina by 23, which was most of the second half was 30-point difference, right? Carolina made a three and a layup at the end of the game to, you know, cut it down to 23. But still, like, you're returning two of your three best players back. You play in a conference that's very advantageous. And it's interesting to me because Geno showed something in both his press conferences, but more specifically before and even more telling after they won the title. He showed a lot of emotion. In the emotion, I don't want to say that I'm not trying to start rumors or anything. Please don't think that. But the emotional reaction told me, besides how happy he was for his players and specifically Paige to get a title, I feel like that was the emotional relief of all these years of frustration where they didn't win. Because mind you, it's not like they had bad years.
Right.
These years they're getting to the Final Four and getting knocked out two wins away from a title. So it's
unhealthy in several of those years as well, and it still almost made it.
Right. And had all kinds of injuries since COVID and health issues, you know. And the one year he said, half my team was throwing up before the game and couldn't play. Like, in a national title game, imagine how that's going to go in any sport. I think what this will do is, to your point, Zay, it's going to re-energize him. He's got two of his three big guns coming back. He'll use the portal. He's got some other pieces, parts that will have bigger roles. He knows he's got a top three team next year already, and that's not even counting what they do in the portal. The question I have is, how much longer will he do it, which no one knows, right? Is this the beginning of another dynasty at UConn? I don't think so. I'll answer that myself. I don't think so because, well, I think Notre Dame's on their way down. I think that you have teams like UCLA, USC, Carolina. There's a lot of other teams that you're going to have to deal with that's going to make it hard for you to dominate like you once did. Yeah. It's hard to win three in a row or four in a row. But it was just good. Much like Belichick, where his players all love and respect him, but the media doesn't like him because he's not socially friendly and doesn't say and act like, you know, how people want you to act. Mm-hmm. Geno's not very well liked by the media in general, but he's a class act guy. The way he responds, the things he says, he's constantly advocating for his players and for women's basketball. He went out of his way to thank the media for coming out and said, I just want to commend you. This is the most women that I've ever seen in a media Final Four in the 40 years I've been doing this. Like, he gave them how many coaches are going to do that? Probably him and Don.
I was about to say, it ain't going to be very many.
So, you know, while it sucks that it happened to Carolina, I think it's great for the game and great for him that they were able to win, because the game's better the longer he stays around.
Agreed. I don't see UConn or women's college basketball being better because Geno's no longer around. I also don't see him doing with his teams the same thing that some other coaches did towards the end of their great tenures. He's still winning at a high level. He never stopped winning at a high level, unlike a Bill Belichick type of a situation. So, yeah. And that pretty much wraps up the truth and nothing but the truth. This week, on our top five all time of something, this was a little bit different, y'all. We're going to have a little bit of fun with this. And I'm, BK, let me tell you how funny this is. I literally flipped my list. What was number one is now number five. What was number five is now number one. And literally the list itself will now read five as the, well, one as five, four as three, four as two, et cetera, et cetera. But the way that just flipped in my mind as we approached showtime, it was interesting. So, yeah, the top five things I would do if I was Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys. The top five things I would do if I was Jerry Jones. BK, what's your number five?
Number five, I'd apologize to the fans.
Okay. I can definitely see several reasons why that would be apropos, for sure.
What about you?
Number five for me, which, as I said, was going to be my number one, but I flipped the list. Hire a coach that has the balls to tell me no before I die so I can win again. Like, that was going to be my number one, but you'll see why it isn't number one when we get to number one. But yeah, that's my number five. Like, when you're the smartest man in the room, doesn't do very much for you as an individual. There's not very much room to grow. When you feel that you're the smartest football mind in the room always, and you don't want to hear anything anyone else has to say, all of your blind spots will eventually sneak up on you. And that's what's happened with the Cowboys. Jerry's actually pretty good at drafting. He actually is. It's all the other stuff. Like, constantly paying his guys. Do you know how much money Jerry Jones would have saved if he paid Michael Parsons before Myles Garrett just got paid again? Do you know how much money he would have saved if he had to pay C.D. Lamb before Jefferson got paid and before all the same thing with Dak? Like, he constantly plays chicken, but then because they are the guys that he drafted, don't want to let him go and ends up actually paying them above what he would have had to pay if he was just done what he knew was going to happen anyway. I digress. What's your number four, BK? And no, that wasn't my rant. It should have been, but go ahead.
Well, speaking of letting go, that's going to be a theme throughout my answers. Number four, trading Dak Prescott. The man doesn't win regular season games. Postseason games, doesn't win postseason games when it matters most. And yeah, there's blame to go around, so it's not just Dak, to be clear. But when you're the quarterback, as Aikman and some of the all-time greats will tell you, you get all the credit when things are good and you get the blame when they're not. And at the end of the day, he doesn't win when it counts. So I would trade Dak. That'd be my number four thing I would do if I were double-checked.
Very interesting. Both of us have a trade at number four. I would trade Michael Parsons to the New England Patriots if I were as Jerry Jones.
Of course you would.
Yeah, I would. You don't want to pay the man.
Let me guess, for a bag of cotton candy and a snick.
No, no, no. Well, here's the thing. If you're not going to pay the man, he's going to leave anyway, and we have the money to pay him. We'll give you another outside linebacker, and we'll give you a pick or two. We aren't going to upset the apple cart here when you're going to have to move along anyway, and there aren't but so many teams that can actually pay him. But we'll pay. I'll tell you what. We pick four. I'll give you this year's second round pick, next year's third round pick, and I'll take on the contract that you aren't willing to pay. That's the best I got for you. And it's the best you're going to get, so send it. That's how I imagine the conversation going with Jerry if I was the GM of the Patriots. But that's my number four. Trade Michael Parsons to New England because they have enough money to pay him. What's your number three?
So number three goes back to something you said earlier. We talk about letting go. I absolutely can't stand the new head coach that they've hired. So we're going to go back to the drawing boards. If I'm Jerry Jones, I'm going to admit that I F this up, and we're going to hire a real head coach and not Dumb and Dumber that they've been trying to run there through all these years. We're going to get a real head coach. So that would be number three.
Hey, BK, yeah. I see your answer and I raise you this. Go back a little bit further. You already had the right coach in the building and you decided that you wanted to let the wrong coach coach one more year. You could have had Dan Quinn as your head coach and your defense would be playing with their heads on fire right now and your offense would be playing with a lot more discipline. So you had the right guy in the you were in the situation where the broke clock was right twice a day, and you still got it wrong. Anyway, I digress.
This is why we can't have nice things.
This is exactly why we can't have nice things. What am I on? Number two for me.
Well, three for you.
Is it?
Yeah.
You're right, because I only have four on my list. Okay, I'll have to come up with something quickly.
I want all of you guys to pause this when you're listening to it, to acknowledge that he said I was right. I want you guys to pause that, rewind a little bit, play that a couple times. Just wanted to point that out for all you good people out there.
All right, so number three for me. This goes away from football a little bit. Like, bro, you're almost out of here. Like, no matter how we slice it, like, go buy an island somewhere, and bring in and ship out whomever you want to. But like, there should be a Jerry Island somewhere that you can just go and not bother others if you choose to not want to be bothered yourself. Like, but. Just buy an island somewhere. It could be one you're familiar with, one that they can actually probably create for you with the amount of money that you have. But just go away. Like, you're not who you used to be. And this isn't ageism, but at some point in your life, shouldn't you no longer want to be the focal point in the room? Like, at some point in time, like, if I'm his son, right? His son is what? Got to be in his 50s now. At some point, can I take over, Dad? I'm just asking. Like, at some point, will this be mine? Do I have to almost be retired myself because you had to stop breathing before I ever had a shot at this? Like, what are we doing? Like, just go somewhere and be still. Sit down somewhere, like my grandma would say. But that's what I would do. I was Jerry Jones. I would go somewhere and sit down. What you got up next, BK? Number two.
I don't even know how I'm going to follow this. But number two, I need him to let his front office do their thing and stop meddling. Because at the end of the day, what he's been doing hasn't worked for 30 years. It's time to do something different. You already told me his team drafts well. Let his front office do what they need to do. and you go play golf or watch Arkansas football back from how many decades ago when you played, but do something else than bother with the team. That's my number two.
Number two for me, sell the Cowboys. Sell them. You get the most money anyone has ever gotten for any team. That's one more trophy you can hang up in your case before you're out of here. Like, sell the Cowboys. There's much more to gain from selling them than there will be from hanging on to them from a family perspective. Your son can actually do whatever he wants to do instead of feeling like he has to be the next man up and then whoever after him. But, yeah, number two, sell the Cowboys.
Which is funny that that was your number two, because my number one is sell the Cowboys.
That was going to be my number one, but I went humanitarian for my number one. My number one, Jerry, you got plenty of money, my guy. You know what you could do that would be of great assistance to your local community? It would set a standard by and large for the world going forward. You know, you can have your name attached to and associated with ending child hunger in the state of Texas and challenge every other billionaire out there to do the same thing in their state of choice. How much would we be able to do with what you've accumulated other than continue to hoard to help others that, and not that this is the end all to be all, but it's also going to be a tax credit. So are you really losing? You got to find something to spend a lot of that money on anyway, every year. Just saying, throwing that out there. Number one,
I like it.
End child hunger in the state of Texas and Arkansas. You got enough money for both. You'd probably pick Arkansas over Texas. Texas is a much larger state. I'd rather you start there. Just putting that out there. And that wraps up the top five all time for this week. Things I would do if I was Jerry Jones. BK, best bets up next. What you got for this week? Are we holding off because we don't play to play, we play to win?
You know me all too well, Zay. You know the playbook, rinse and repeat. If you all paid attention to the March Madness best bets, y'all made a lot of money. Congratulations. Hopefully you chose to ride the continued success. But nope, we're going to wait for next week. No plays this week. We're just going to spend this week counting our money and see what brings next week. Just be mindful. You'll start seeing plays as the NHL playoffs near, as well as the NBA playoffs. They'll be here very shortly. Major League Baseball is really tough. I know a lot of people get cute with, like, you know, player props and those kind of things and first five inning plays and all kinds of things like that. Even though there's a lot of calculations that go to that, there's still a lot of variables. I'd rather us focus our money on better options, not just for the sake of doing it. So we will count our money and wait till next week, Zay.
I love it. Now, let's go ahead and go to, I believe, the most popular part of the show, this week's Can't Miss Weekly Rants. You want to start out first or you want me to go first?
I will go first this week.
All righty. What we got for the people?
So I'm going to go back to a theme, and this goes back to something that my dad always taught me growing up, which is, stop blaming the officials when you lose. I understand that officials are human. I understand that, like all humans, we make mistakes, some bigger than others. And I understand, because of the magnitude of the stage being the Final Four, that all eyes everywhere are on it. And I know that there's financial ramifications as well for those of us who like to toss a few shekels at these things. But I say that to say that there was an ungodly amount of criticism of these refs for the Cooper flag over the back call, how the officiating screwed Houston against Florida and cost them a national title in the last 10 minutes. Here's the thing. Championship teams find a way to get it done. There are no excuses on Hard Work Boulevard. You got to do the work. You have to play the full game, all 40 minutes. And unfortunately for Houston, they only played 39 minutes. And unfortunately for Duke, they played 39 minutes and 25 seconds. Unfortunately, you got to play 40, and both of them would have had better outcomes. So stop blaming the refs. The refs didn't cheat you out of inbounding the ball. The ref never misses any free throws, although they did bone North Carolina on a lane violation call, but that's a story for a different day. But in general, take accountability. You have to execute down the stretch. You need to inbound the ball. You need to make your free throws. You need to stop fouling three-point shooters. You need to rebound the basketball. You need to play winning basketball down the stretch. Yes, give the other teams credit for putting game pressure on you and making it tough and forcing you into these mistakes. But at the end of the day, championship teams, winners never make excuses. And I think the world of both, and to be clear, Duke and Houston didn't make these excuses. But I'm tired of fans with that losing mentality of blaming someone else. Your team blew it, not the officials. And that's the truth.
So, BK, I'll follow a little bit in your footsteps, and there will be a little bit of chastisement, if you will, towards the fans in this one. I don't know if you understand how difficult it is to win, especially a championship, but when I see supposed Gamecock fans attempting to throw the baby out with the bathwater, my idiot radar is on full alert at this point. I've literally seen fans posting and arguing, if you will, that Don Staley needs to go. Go where? Go home, take a break, and get ready to coach next season? Like, what are you talking about? Would you think we were going to swap out with Gino, with UConn, and bring in Gino Auriemma, who would never leave UConn? Who is it that you're going to get that's better than Don? I'm confused. I don't get where, when a person is better than 99.9.5% of the people that do what they do, but yet idiots want to call for their job as if they could do it better or as if they have a suggestion of who could attempt to go about doing it better. This woman should have 4 championships already. I don't know that the school had a championship in basketball ever before she got here. I think the only championship that the school had was baseball prior to Don coming here. And now you're talking about, yeah. Okay, gotcha. So, and now you're talking about because she didn't beat the GOAT coach. And I do say GOAT coach because he has 12 freaking championships. He has more championships than Phil Jackson at the same school through several generations. So he didn't ride the back of a couple players to his championships. He had completely different teams set up. And what we're talking about today, instead of patting Don Staley on her back saying, hey, coach, thanks for getting us to another championship in a year where anyone who actually paid any attention to the team knew we weren't nearly as good as we were or nearly as good as we're going to be going forward. This was South Carolina's retooling year. I don't know if the casual fan realized that. This was the year that they had to get back to what they were so that they can be better than they have been going forward. Pay attention, and I understand that fan is short for fanatic, but for some, there's a very, very thin line between fanatical and idiotic. Please don't overstep your bounds. And that's the truth, and nothing but the truth. So you guys remember.
And just
we'll be back to you. Go ahead, BK.
Just to piggyback on that, Zay, because that was perfectly said. What was the state of South Carolina women's basketball before Dawn got here?
Did we have a team?
We did. You wouldn't have thought so, but we had one. What do you think the team's going to be like when Gino leaves UConn or Dawn leaves South Carolina?
What Tennessee is going through?
It's going to be a lot of struggling. So so what I'm saying to piggyback off of what you said so well is enjoy being spoiled. Enjoy all the winning. Appreciate her greatness and stop being stupid.
And that, good people, wraps up the show for this week. We will have the fantasy show on next week. Make sure, if you have not subscribed, followed, all that good stuff, make sure you go ahead and do that. The day that the show comes out may vary a little bit with different things going on between the three of us. But make sure if you follow, then you'll get a notification as soon as the show comes out, which works out well for all parties involved. Go ahead and do it. You have nothing to lose. With that being said, that ends the show for today. And remember, good people, always, always tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth. Have a great weekend, y'all.
We out.